Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Shut Up and Dribble. I'm your host, Jeffrey Lin, and today I have a very, very special guest who is very near and dear to my heart, my roommate, Annie Wong.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay, whatever. Hi, everyone. Hi.
And Annie here is here with me today to discuss a topic that she's not really familiar with, which will be interesting because that's the subject of this podcast. And we're here to discuss basketball. More specifically, we're here to talk about Kevin Garnett's newest documentary on Showtime, Anything Is Possible. So Annie, can you give me a little bit of your basketball knowledge?
Can we just go to the documentary?
Wait, no, tell me what, just to give some background for our listeners here.
What background?
Just like, you know, give a sense of, you know, where you're starting from. Like, did you know who Kevin Garnett was
before? I knew his name. I didn't realize he was the one that said anything is possible.
So what did you know about Kevin Garnett?
Literally nothing. His name. I knew his name. I actually didn't even know what he looked like.
Okay, so moving on to the documentary. So just for a quick summary of the documentary, it basically starts out with Kevin Garnett's humble beginnings in South Carolina, up to his high school career at Farragut Academy, to his drafting by the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then it ends with the 2008 championship he won with the Celtics, along with Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, and Doc Rivers. And it ends there, which is very conspicuously not the end of his actual career, which, you know, he ends with the Timberwolves actually like at least 5 years later. So it ends at the high point. So Annie, do you have any thoughts about the documentary?
I talked about this, I feel like I said this yesterday, but every documentary I've watched about a basketball player, so I like documentaries about basketball players because they're like inspirational, but every single one I've watched is like, this is the best player that's ever lived. And if like you weren't on the side telling me whether or not they have like good stats, I think I would just believe every basketball player is the best basketball player that's ever lived. Like I watched that one about Stephon Marbury, and they made it seem like he was really good, and then you said he's not that good.
Well, to clarify, if there are any real big Stephon Marbury stands out there, he was good, but he just wasn't. You thought he was like a top player of all time.
They made it seem like he was. They really did. They were like, wow, he's like so amazing and like nobody's ever done this before. That kind of feeling. And I was like, oh, okay, he must be like really, really good. Like the top of the top. I don't know if I'm offending anyone.
He was fine. Stephon Marbury, you know, he was fine. He was definitely fine. So what, after watching this, where do you think Kevin Garnett stands as a basketball player? Do you feel like he's one of the best? Like, if you had to give him a ranking, what would you give?
I don't know, like top 10?
Top 10? Top 10, I think, is, you know, there are some very smart people out there who have Kevin Garnett in the top 10.
What about you? Do you have him in the top 10?
I think I have him in the top 15.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not that far off.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. They did a good job. Well, yeah, I think you usually only have these documentaries made for really the top stars. Mm. And I think Stephon Marbury is an exception because he has an interesting story going to China and everything. But mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely Kevin Garnett is the top, probably 15 player all time. He's probably a little underrated actually by most people.
Wait, where's Stephon Marbury then?
Stephon Marbury? Oh, he might. I don't know. I usually don't go that far down
in my rankings. Oh my god.
I'm sure he's probably like top 150.
150?
There have been a lot of players in the basketball game.
Jesus. All right. Yeah.
Okay. So what sort of things about the documentary stood out to you?
Okay. Yeah, I think Kevin Garnett seems like, he seems like really goofy. Like, I feel like of all the documentaries we've watched, minus the one that talked about Meta World Peace, he's like the weirdest one that we've seen. Because he started the doc and he was like, one tablespoon of I don't know, hate, or like two tablespoons of hate, and like one teaspoon of love, and like, I was like, okay, whatever. He's like kind of strange, and he had a lot of like big mannerisms, and I guess I talked about that a lot too, is that he like trash talked a lot, and so many people were like, I probably heard him before I saw him because of how much he like talks and is loud. So I thought that was interesting because I don't know, the other dogs that we've watched, it didn't seem like, yeah, they all have big personalities, but he seems like a unique personality.
Yeah, and definitely that's Kevin Garnett's persona, like loud talker. He trash talks a lot, and that's how he's known around the league to be like that. Yeah, definitely. I didn't think he was that weird either. There's just some point he's like makes like these weird like impressions.
Yeah, he did a lot of impressions, and he had a lot of facial expressions that were like really, his eyes get like really big and stuff. Yeah, he just seems like really strange, but he seems like he'd be fun to hang out with.
Yeah, I also didn't realize how big his eyes were.
Yes,
that's until true. Yeah, and now I realize this, how terrifying he probably was to face down this 7 foot tall, like bug-eyed man in basketball.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
What'd you think of the dog?
I thought it was okay. I thought, I mean, it was good to, it's, these are always like inspirational stories, because most basketball players have a very inspirational story. I think it was, there was nothing really very like surprising about it, and there was no like new information that I didn't know before, so it wasn't like jaw-dropping in that way, but I think just knowing that like he like produced it, and this was made by him, and thinking about the choices that he made and just kind of the things he decided to omit from...
Like what?
I think the biggest thing was that, you know, Ray Allen wasn't in the documentary at all, or even mentioned really at all. And that's a big... So when the Celtics were formed in 2008, you know, towards the end, there was like Paul Pierce... and Ray Allen were acquired. I know Ray Allen was acquired by the Celtics. Paul Pierce was already on the team, and then they got Kevin Garnett. And so they were seen as the big three. But I think what after Ray Allen joined the Heat, I think in 2013, there was a falling out between them, because Ray Allen was seen to have kind of betrayed them. And... yeah, they had like a Celtics reunion maybe a couple years ago, and Ray Allen wasn't invited. He wasn't there. So,
drama.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they would have buried the hatchet by now, but you know, especially because he was such a big part of that Celtics run.
Yeah, I don't know. I sometimes just don't feel like it's a big deal if they leave for another team. It's like if you worked in an office and then you left to work for a different office. I don't know why there's so much drama. yeah, that's interesting. Well, I think, okay, I was like totally new to it, so I didn't know anything about him, clearly. But I thought it was interesting that he was able to hide being a basketball player from his mom for 3 years.
Yeah.
While in high school.
That's hard.
It's like harder when you're, because you're living with her when you're in high school. It's hard to hide stuff when you're in high school. And to do it for so long. Like, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, so back in the documentary, he talks about how his mom didn't want him to play for this high school team because they're Jehovah's Witnesses and they only play for...
Jehovah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So, he hid it from his mom for 3 years until one day someone told her son was playing in the game, and she went to the game. And after... seeing how passionate Kevin was playing, she decided to let him play.
Yeah.
So, which is great.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I saw her in the stands, and she was like, have a good game, but I'm gonna kill you.
yeah, that may be, yeah. You know, sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission, huh?
Yeah.
Before parents.
Okay, one thing I think about is, like, because they made, not that they made a big deal, but they talked a lot about how he went straight from high school to play, like, basketball. And then I guess like other people did it after him because they saw that he did it. I don't know. I guess I wonder if maybe we should just let people just go straight from high school. Because like some people don't go to college and they just go work. And this is the same thing, but just on a bigger stage. So I don't know why it's such a big deal that people have to go. If they were good enough. And like for players, like, you know, you only have a certain amount of time before your body kind of doesn't let you do it anymore. Like, why not maximize that time that to do the thing that you're good at? So I don't know. What what do you know about that?
Yeah, I agree. I agree that players should be allowed to enter the NBA whenever they want to. And I think the biggest arguments against that, what people will say, I don't agree with pretty much any of them, is that when you're quote-unquote like protecting the players from making bad decisions, because if you give like millions of dollars to someone that young, then they'll make bad decisions with it, which like I don't really agree with. I think it's not really about how young the person is, it's about the support they have and everything. And I also do feel that it's a racialized thing, because you're talking about giving young like black men typically this kind of money. And you know, as we've seen, sometimes it's not just young black men who make mistakes with their money. It's basically everyone who doesn't have a good support system. And you know, even people who do have good support systems might be fraudulently taking your money. Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh no. No, that's true. Well, I wonder, do you know if the NBA has like financial literacy programs for people? Like, I feel like people kind of come in with varying degrees of understanding of how to manage money.
I think it's not something that's league-wide, and it's pretty much kind of based upon your team and how much support your team will do. I think there's always been talk about financial literacy classes given, and I think the players' union might have things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the resources are there. If you want them. I think more and more players have become like sophisticated over time as these like support systems have grown, and lots of players I think just have like their own like financial managers. And I think another issue is that a lot of stuff before was under the table. And for example, there's a lot of like under the table like money, because all these colleges and everything, they recruit, you know, athletes over, and you know, athletes aren't supposed to get money from that. They're just supposed to go to school. But I think everyone knows that there are some benefits of going to a certain school, and a lot of those will be kind of like monetary. And potential agents will make promises to these players and give money like to these players. And I think because a lot of it was like underground, there was less kind of like regulation of it, and there was no real like standard for it. But I think hopefully now with the new name, image, and likeness, or NIL rules, things like that will become more like above ground and can be better and can be more standardized. And or at least there's a higher like standard. There is not someone like, you know, running that piles of cash in the back of their truck and doing that kind of thing. So,
oh, like how he said he put all his money under a mattress for 2 years. He had $2 million in his mattress.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett probably needed some financial literacy courses.
He was like, I didn't believe in banks. I was like, what?
That's understandable, I think, for
someone. I guess, yeah. I get that. But yeah. Damn, like $2 million under. You're basically just sleeping on money.
Yeah. That's probably exaggeration, too. I don't think I don't think the Timberwolves would have had like the ability just to give him $2 million
in cash.
Yeah.
He's like, we just brown bagged it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Yeah. Well, so like who was the last, do you know who the last player to go through from high school was?
I don't know the last player. There have been some players who bypassed college and went to the NBA after doing some other thing. I think for one example is Darius Bazley, who's a forward on the Oklahoma City Thunder. He did an internship at, I think, New Balance for a year and then went straight to the NBA afterwards.
So you don't need a college degree, you just need to have not been in just straight. But how does that work? How does that make sense?
So I think the rule is that you have to be 19.
Okay.
And been eligible. Yeah.
You have to be 19?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or been, I think it's something like you have to be 19 or eligible for at least like one draft before. But I think, yeah, you have to. I think the cutoff is like 19.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Also, it's not that they have to go to college. They just have to be a certain age.
Yeah, it's not, you don't have, yeah, that's right. You don't have to have gone to like college. You could have gone, then now there are a lot more options for players. There's, you can join, the G League has a program. So that's the NBA Developmental League. You can do that. You can go play overseas for a year. Two players did that recently, LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton. They did that. And there's also this new Overtime Elite program, which they start out earlier than after you graduate, actually. I think it's more of like a high school academic program. But yeah, now there are more options for players instead of going to college. But I think now with the new name, image, and likeness rules, which will allow players to profit off their own brand, then going to college might be more of a financial, might be a better financial decision for them because they could potentially make a lot of money by like having brand deals and being playing at a certain college.
Yeah. I don't know. One thing I noticed in the doc, and this is probably like so, I don't know if people like talk about this, but it seemed like all the people in the leadership were not people of color.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like kind of weird to see them. Because I think, oh, there was that, because they talked about, oh, he rejected $103 million, and then he got $126 million, and then after that they like responded by capping salaries. And then like a few of the people in the doc made the comment like, if you can pay one player $126 million, like, how much is your leadership making that you can just drop that money on one player? So it's, like, I guess, like, people seem like they raise suspicions from it. Because I guess it sounded like there wasn't that much transparency before about payment or payment for players or leadership or anything like that. So I thought it was interesting, like, you have that happen and then such a harsh response. And then you see throughout the doc all of the people that are giving out the awards, that are, like, running the show, or, like, all, like, really old. It's always, like, the old, like, white guys. And then you have most of your players are, like, young black kids. So it's, like, I don't know. It just feels weird to watch the dynamic.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it can be uncomfortable. And I think this has been going on more and more. Lately, the more and more talk about this has happened, especially, a person who owns the team is called the owner mm-hmm. of it. And some people feel uncomfortable with that because of the relationship with like slavery. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, a lot of these NBA players are black men mm-hmm. and then they work for the owner, basically who's their boss, who pays them. Mm-hmm. And so some people have wanted to use a different term besides owner for that. So it can be a very uncomfortable dynamic. And for the payment structure for leadership, I thought that was interesting because there's still a lot of, there's still not a lot of transparency behind how much like managers, like GMs or coaches are paid. But usually it's much less than players.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For example, the highest paid GM or executive in the league is probably Masai Ujiri, the Toronto Raptors. He's probably paid maybe like between $7 or $10 million per year. Hmm. Well, you compare that to, I think the highest paid player on this team is Pascal Siakam. I think he's paid about $30 million per year.
So what were they talking about? Because they were saying, right, like during the doc, they were like, when they were making the comment, how much can you be making if you can drop $126 million on one player? Were they talking about not the GM, but like higher leadership? That's who they were talking about.
I think they were referring to the owners, okay. The owners of these teams.
Yeah.
And yeah, those, these owners, usually they come from like ownership groups, so a group of people. But very rarely you'll get a situation where one person has enough capital to buy the entire team. So these people are usually very successful business people mm-hmm. who've accumulated a lot of money and from other businesses. and they just probably just have like a lot of money, and then the NBA will bring in a lot of revenue through ticket sales and TV deals and advertisements and naming rights deals and things like that. So, and then the value of a franchise is also quite a bit, and it's grown quite a lot recently. So yeah, these people bring in, the leaders bring in like a ton of money. And even though it's arguably the, well, not arguably, it's definitely the players who are kind of driving the league and everything. So yeah, they make a lot.
I mean, like, okay, honestly, like, everybody's been making a lot. So I'm yeah. here, like, oh, these poor basketball players are paying $30 million. It's like, I mean, it's all, I guess at this point, it's more just about, you know, fairness in general and kind of like a general larger narrative about like justice in this, in the system. Cause like when you, I don't know, sometimes I think like when you talk about things like, oh, we'll use a different word than owner, that's like a band-aid
yeah.
over a larger issue. And so like, I don't know, are there like, is there a trend of more like people of color owning basketball teams?
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. It seems like more and more people of color are owning basketball. You know, I think it's just accumulating more capital. Yeah. Like, for example, Michael Jordan
owns... Wasn't he a bad owner, though?
He is currently an owner, and he is currently a bad owner.
He's just, what is he, like a bad manager?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, well...
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just his basketball decision-making is not the best.
That's so interesting, because he's such a good player.
Yeah, it's interesting like that. Yeah. I think it's a lot. I think the explanation for that resonates with me with the most is that they are good at like one aspect of the game, mm-hmm. but not the rest of it.
Yeah, I guess like managing is much different than like playing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense.
And then also one thing is that like players, they like practice and they focus on their side of it, but they don't necessarily aren't watching all 29 other teams. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Yeah, they don't really know like what's going on, because they just don't have the bandwidth for that, because they're so focused on what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess it's like, yeah, if you have like more players, it would be interesting to see like more players retire and then own teams, but if they own them poorly, then that's like less interesting.
Yeah, you know, they could, yeah.
But clearly that's not going to be the case for everyone, right? So
that's true.
Yeah, I guess just having that opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But if you, I don't know, I guess like looking long term as a player, if you wanted to own a team in the future, you would want to start that early, right? Like you would want to be able to start looking at other teams and like thinking more about what it means to be a manager. So like as you're leaving towards retirement, maybe you start thinking about that.
Yeah, I think so. And it just takes a lot of... It just takes a lot of capital, I think, to buy kind of like a majority stake in a team. I think for example, I think the Hawks, I think the majority stake sold for about $800 million.
Oh.
Now, the Timberwolves were actually sold recently, too. And a big part of that ownership group was Alex Rodriguez. So A-Rod, so you know, even like other sports teams, mm-hmm. and then, but there are more instances of of players buying like minority shares mm-hmm. in a team. I think Dwayne Wade just bought part minority shares of the Utah Jazz. I think Grant Hill is also part of the ownership group for Atlanta. Well, Jay-Z is like part owner of the Nets. Mm-hmm. Joe Tsai, I think, is a majority owner
mm-hmm.
of the Nets. Mm-hmm. You'll have stuff like that. And then it's also just hard, right? To convince someone to sell their team, mm-hmm. a majority stake in their team. And you just need someone. Like, it's like what Chris Rock said about Shaquille O'Neal. That, you know, Shaq is rich, but the guy who was paying Shaq is wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, so we would be talking about Kevin Garnett.
I think the Kevin Garnett, you know, especially the contract situation. And do you have any question about the Mac? Do you understand like that part of it?
Oh yeah. Well, I think I don't know. I have in my notes, this is going back to when before he was in the NBA. But it feels like a lot of things lined up really well for him. Like he was talking about that one time his friend, he wanted to just, like, chill or something, and his friend was like, let's go play basketball. And then they ended up playing with the Chicago Bulls at that random gym. And then he met Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
And then Isaiah Thomas, like, was a big part of the reason he was, like, drafted and, like, started on that process and, like, told him he could go through high school or from high school. I'm like, wow, like, and he even said it, too. He's like, what if I had never gone to that gym? What if I had gone to a different gym? Like, would I have gone to the NBA? And it's, like, these, like, small things, like, that just, like, propel you, right? Isn't that crazy?
Anything is possible.
I can't believe he's the one that said that. It's so funny. Oh my god. You can fly.
Yeah, no, I think I don't. So in my mind, I don't think it probably didn't happen as serendipitously as that.
You think so?
No, I think it was probably like a conversation. Or maybe not. I don't know. His coach didn't seem like the most organized person in the world, because he even admitted on it. He said, like, because they lost in the semifinals or something. He's like, I didn't scout the other team. I'm like, come on, man. You didn't scout the other team. I kind of understand, right? If you have Kevin Garnett and then his teammate, like, Ronnie Fields, who apparently were two top prospects, you probably feel like you could be anyone. But you didn't scout the other team. That's part of the job description.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, you think that was a made-up story? You think they, like...
I don't think it was made up.
Yeah.
I think it was probably not as spontaneous.
Like, maybe they knew they were going to be playing there. Or there's a possibility that they might be there, so they went to that specific gym. Or you think Isaiah Thomas reached out to him before and was, like, interested in him, and then it just so happened that they ended up at the same gym? Like, what side of the conspiracy line do you fall on?
I think Kevin Garnett probably had an idea that he could be drafted out of high school. Yeah. He probably didn't find that out in that conversation. Mm-hmm. I think maybe his friends knew the Bulls were going to be playing there. Mm-hmm. And potentially, part of me also feels like he might have been invited. Mm. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it was as serendipitous, spontaneous, especially like that, the fact that Isaiah Thomas was just there.
Why was he not like part of the Bulls? Like, was he separate?
He was not part of the Bulls. He was an executive for the Raptors at the time.
And, oh, that's right. He said he was scouting.
And Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas famously do not like each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Michael Jordan was like the reason why that, or allegedly Michael Jordan is the reason why Isaiah Thomas was not on the 1996, whenever they went to Spain on the original Dream Team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, yeah, he said that in his doc, too.
Yeah. So I just saw that. So I, like, putting, like, these things together, I'm thinking there are some, like, inconsistencies there.
Interesting.
In the story.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, maybe his friends knew and they wanted to hide it so that he could have this, like, brilliant story.
I think some parts were probably just embellished.
I guess, maybe. Yeah. You know what hits me is, like, all of these players, they're so confident. And I wonder if they, like, were naturally more, like, confident. Because, like, when you're naturally skilled at something, I feel like you, like, gain confidence. You just, like, are more confident because, like, you just are beating everyone all the time. Clearly he had to work for it too. It's not just like natural talent, but they're all just like so confident and like in each other's faces all the time. And like, it's, I don't know. I'm just like, maybe all athletes are like this. Like, you have to have a certain level of like confidence and attitude to make it in that scene.
I think so. There's definitely that.
Like, it's wild they don't kill each other more often, because they're just, like, so, like, because they're so, like, out there, and, you know, like, they're big personalities and stuff. Like, I'm shocked that they don't all hate each other.
Some are small, like, you know, I think you have a mix of it. Some are, like, smaller, some are not. I think all of them are fairly competent in their skills. I think it comes at you kind of, like, quickly, the limitations of how good you can be. But there's also, I think it's like a mix of both. I think, you know, people are really, people are just really, like, trying hard and
yeah
but you have to like you have to have that baseline confidence in yourself that you can do it or continue to improve. And yeah, that's true. I agree.
Yeah, because he was talking about they where was he went to like a NBA like trials practice or something before he was drafted, and then he was saying like, or Kevin Garnett was saying like, the guy, one of the guys that was watching was like, oh, why am I here watching this high school player? Like, oh, why am I wasting my time? Oh,
Pat Riley.
Yeah, he's like, why am I wasting my time? And then Kevin Garnett was like, okay, you think you're wasting your time? And then he was like, I did that whole practice by myself for 90 minutes. He said it three times.
I'm like, yeah, it was a solo practice for you.
But yeah, it's like that kind of, every dog we've watched, they've all had moments like that where they're like, where they're like, oh, like, you don't believe in me? Well, fuck you. And then it, like, drives them. And then they're like, see how awesome I am.
Yeah, that's, like, I don't know. Yeah, I think especially in the face of adversity, like, how do you respond?
Yeah. And they're all clearly really resilient. Especially because, like, every one of their stories is so, like, inspirational. Like, not everyone, but, like, a lot of them. All the ones we watch, they, like, come from really hard backgrounds where they don't have like a lot of support, or maybe they have community support but they don't have like monetary support, they don't have like a lot of those other things, and then but they just keep going and they just like are clearly really resilient. So I feel like that's like that's why I really like docs like this, because it's like so inspirational.
Yeah,
even if it feels like every single one is the best one of all
time. Well, just not Stephon. I was just surprised that Stephon Marbury was, you're like, oh, he must have been really good. And
well, that's what they made it seem like. They're like, oh, like, think, look at this kid. He was so good in high school. Like, oh, he was the best that there was. And, like, I was like, okay, he must be really good.
Yeah, I mean, another thing is that these players are grew up, like, best on the playground, best in high school, and then best in like college, and then even that's not enough sometimes to make it to the NBA.
That's wild. Just think about that. It's like the Olympics all the time for basketball players to be in the NBA. That's how it seems.
Yeah. You can't be like that one skier who was mediocre, but she just went to like a bunch of other like countries and just eventually made it. But that takes a lot of dedication too. Like I really respect that.
It's the skill of planning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like, I'm like so inspired by it. It's like a whole other world. It's like just crazy to think about. Because when they have scenes with like the teams interacting with each other too, it's like a lot. I don't know. I guess it makes me think of like, oh, what if you played high school basketball and then you just did that for the rest of your career? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you just play a sport. I don't know. It's like a strange thing to think about.
No, it's a strange thing because there's, you know, with a team like that, I think because you're in it all the time together, it becomes more like a family sort of thing. Yeah. But I mean, when we go to work, it's very much like, you know, yeah, they're like my work, my colleagues and friends and everything are there, but then they'll like talk about it as if like you're a family, but
you ain't a family.
It's a little different, but I think I guess it just depends on the environment.
Yeah.
Right. It really depends, but like I don't think if like Mark Zuckerberg was like, Facebook is my family.
I bet he says that all the time. I bet you no, Meta is my family.
You are my Meta family.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not. It's just not. But team, right, you're like in there in the fire like all the time. And
yeah,
I think that's when it can be hard to separate the fact that it's a business.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Which is why Kevin Garnett was so upset when Ray Allen left.
That makes sense. Okay, I get it now. Yeah. It's like pretty special though to have that. I think he was talking to Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
And they were saying like, oh, like when we won the finals together, he's like, oh, that's a bond that you can't break. Like we're like bonded forever. And I was like, yeah, you know, I feel like that really is like how it would be.
Then why isn't Ray Allen in the documentary?
He ain't bonded again. He severed the bond.
I thought the bond was something you can't break though.
You could break it if you do it yourself. You cut your own bond, you can do it.
I do feel like Kevin Garnett's probably underrated historically because of the contract, the max contract, and
because he got a lot of flack for it.
Yeah, and then also his abilities were as a floor spacing power forward center type. I think were ahead of his time. I think because he only won one championship, people kind of have him below people like Kobe and Tim Duncan.
Okay, I think that rating system is stupid because, like, you don't just play, it's not one player, it's an entire team. So, like, why would him not winning one, like, only winning one playoff or finals, like, why should that affect how good he is rated as a player? It's not all in his hands. It's not all in his control just because he's the best one on the team. That's dumb. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, I think it's a combination. I think for me, it is a combination of things, and how many championships you won is like an important factor in it, but I don't think it should be the only thing, because at the end of the day, Kevin Garnett didn't play with someone on the level of Shaq. And
is Shaq higher on your rating than Kevin Garnett?
That's an interesting one there. I think they're probably close.
They're close?
Yeah. I think they're closer than, I think a lot, yeah. They're close to me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think like Shaq, Kobe, Kevin Garnett are all kind of like close.
Didn't Shaq and Kobe not like each other?
They did not like each other.
LOL. But they played so well together, it seemed like.
Yeah, they did, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, who do you have? How do you rank all these players?
I don't know. I'm in it for the inspiration and for the drama.
I mean, it was, like, a pretty inspiring documentary, but, I mean, it's interesting if you didn't really know a lot about Kevin Garnett's story. I think the most interesting parts to me have always been kind of, like, the smaller stories with, like, the players and the history before them joining the NBA. That's weird. Because they, you know, they talked about the arm wrestling story.
Yeah.
When they're on the plane. Mm-hmm. That's actually something I've heard before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
So a lot, kind of, sometimes I like listen to it and I'm like, oh, this isn't new to me. Like, I know what went on, but yeah.
Well, it's kind of fun to hear them talk about it themselves.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because they like were the ones doing it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, I don't know. I always take away from these docs like, wow, like anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible. Yeah. So, Annie, do you have any basketball questions? Do you think this will? I know one thing I've been trying to get you to do is be more interested in basketball.
Give a shit.
Do you think this will make you like watch like act like basketball playing like?
I think one entry point for me is like I would care more if I knew more about the players, because then I don't really care that much about teams. I'm not like, oh, I'm a, I don't know, like a Warriors fan. Like, I don't drop into a city and feel like, I love this team. But if I knew about the players and I like really connected with their story, I think I would care more.
Yeah.
Because then I can root for that player.
Yeah.
And I think I would care more if I had one like specific like reason, right?
Yeah.
I'd feel more Ubuntu.
Ubuntu.
Yeah, I feel more like connected that way. Like when I was reading that, what was his name again? I didn't end up getting to finish that doc, the biography.
Oh, Andre Iguodala?
Yeah, I was reading his biography and that was like super inspirational too. Oh, and also the other player when we were in Tahoe.
Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, man, his story was so crazy. I was like, oh my god, yeah. If I watched him play, I think I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'd really root for him because I am like, wow, you've come so far.
Yeah.
And like, that's so inspirational.
Okay. Yeah, so we'll watch the Miami Heat games then.
Okay. Their uniforms are also really cute.
Oh yeah, the Miami Vice, the pink ones?
Yeah, they're cute.
The pink and powder blue?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good.
They did a good job.
Yeah, those are pretty good. Those are probably one of the top uniforms in the league. Okay, well, thank you so much, Annie, for coming on and talking about this documentary, and I hope I was able to explain any questions you had about basketball. Do you have anything you would like to plug for my listeners?
I run my own business. I make vegan East Asian snacks. And it's called Annie's Tea Cakes for now. If y'all are interested in Taiwanese pineapple cakes or tang yuan or moon cakes or anything similar to that, hit me up. It's at Annie's Tea Cakes on socials. The T is just the letter, not like tea time.
And I'll be tagging Annie and put everything else in the show notes. So yeah, thank you so much, Annie, for coming on. And just for a note for the listeners, I know I usually release two times per month, but the later half of this month, just because of the holidays and everything, we'll be taking a short break. But please let me know if you have any suggestions or ideas for further topics and anything. And yeah, thank you so much for supporting. If you can, please leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, whatever rating system Spotify uses. And please let me know if you have any feedback, negative, positive, or anything in between. All right, thank you.
And remember, anything is possible.